CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang joins me, my colleague and friend and co-host, the Air Force. The headline: Air Force launches reorganization, warning we are out of time to match China. Subhead: Under the reoptimizing effort, changes are coming across the Department of the Air Force, from new training approaches to the establishment of high-level offices. This is puzzling, Gordon. I thought everything was going well, so we turned to our colleague Blaine Holt, retired Air Force general, who served as deputy military representative at NATO. Blaine, a very good day to you. Reorganizing the Air Force, it was doing just fine. What happened? What are they reorganizing from? Good evening to you.
Good evening to both of you. You know, it's an unfortunate happenstance, and it's almost a rule of thumb in the military or massive bureaucracies that when you've run out of ideas and things aren't going your way, then the next step is reorganization. And if it's even really worse than that, then you'll start to see a uniform board to change what the uniform looks like. The unfortunate part is, however the Air Force or the Navy want to reorganize their forces or represent their chains of command, building in additional bureaucracies is not going to get us cheaper weapons. Adding layers or calling things more politically astute names like Airman Development Center instead of Air Education and Training Command will not make you more lethal or more fearsome to a determined foe. What we have here is cancerous Marxist ideologies running in our military now, in this DEI rush, diversity, equity, inclusion rush, and that supplants the meritocracy. That's what gives the military its fine edge. And it's demoralizing when you don't have that. And the recruitment numbers and the retention numbers show that. And unfortunately, the Chinese, the Iranians, the Russians, and the North Koreans are taking very good notes about where we're at. Dear Secretary Frank Kendall will not do well if all he's planning to do is rearrange some deck chairs.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Blaine, could a new president sort of by the magic wand of an executive order end this, or does it take years to get back to this meritocracy?
Yeah, the meritocracy being reestablished could happen very, very quickly. Unfortunately, it's like a patient with advanced cancer. An ideology is something that's antithetical to the United States Constitution and the constitutional oath. So, in order to fix it rather rapidly and put our edge back on our blade, it's going to mean that many who have espoused and championed these ideologies are going to have to go and leave our military. And then we're probably going to be bringing back a lot of graybeards, those who have retired, who still maintain their oath to the Constitution and a warrior's ethos, to come back in and right the ship, get the military back to where it needs to be, which is a premier fighting force that Americans who are patriots want to stand up and volunteer and be a part of something bigger than themselves.
My reading, Blaine, not experience, is from the Second War. And I recall a phrase that was used repeatedly, why we were able to prevail over the superior Imperial Japanese Navy Air Force was because of our training. Because we had hundreds coming online, where the Japanese lost their best pilots right away and didn't train. You fight like you train like you fight. That's from the Second War. Has that changed, Blaine?
Unfortunately, it has, because we've gone to an over-reliance on technology and platforms, and that's how we end up with $2 billion bombers. And so we really are focused in this hyper-intensive technology environment. And meanwhile, the ideologies, this DEI movement, starts to eat into the training day of our forces and getting them their realistic training. Now, here's the optimistic statement I'll make. Back to the Second War. Once we got on step, everything you're saying, John, was very, very true. But we didn't start out that way. We were an overbloated bureaucracy, and we had a lot of cocktail party generals who didn't really understand what was about to come about. Rabble-rousers like Claire Chennault were drummed out of the military for suggesting that pursuit aircraft and little fighters might be very, very useful in a bomber world. And he literally took the slow boat to China and, with new advanced tactics, taught the world how to defeat the Japanese Zero and Japanese tactics. And that's how America got back on step. So our rabble rousers, our innovation, our creativity, still very much in the DNA of the United States military, even the one we're talking about tonight.
Gordon, you have a question.
You mentioned, Blaine, that in this beginning of the Second World War, our planes, for instance, were inferior. And I think that was probably true with regard to the other branches of the service with their equipment. Right now, when you look at the Air Force's planes, how do they match up with, for instance, Russia or China?
Yep. So this is a strength that we have. A lot of the Russian and the Chinese technology has been basically you're looking at stolen intellectual property. But when we start to look at what the Russians are fielding for aircraft and what the Chinese are fielding for aircraft, while they're flattering and they have some capabilities that we have, truly calling them fifth and sixth generation fighters is a misnomer. The ranges aren't as good. The materials that they're made with aren't nearly as good. And there's a lot of corruption in both militaries. You know, when Putin went to war in Ukraine, he thought he had a much more formidable fighting force and efficient fighting force than the one he saw play out. And amongst the PLA, when they think about Taiwan and what they might have to do, they're very worried that they're going to be massively embarrassed, because not just because of the material, but because they don't fight cohesively as a joint force would. They don't understand combined arms. They're much more stovepiped in both systems because of the distrust, and you can't give too much power to the military. So we have an edge in these camps. Now, technologically, in the hypersonics area, in cybersecurity, and in space, oh, Gordon, they are a peer right in that zone with us. And they've proven many times they're willing to use those weapons, the Iranians as well.
Quick question. I asked this of the Navy, so ask it of the Air Force. Yes, the Chinese show off their high-end stuff at air shows. What about the quality, Blaine? Because there are doubts about the quality of the shipyards, what they produce, you know, sawdust instead of metal. We've heard complaints about the rocket force. Have you heard anything about the Air Force that way?
Absolutely. So the materials that go into these weapons are pretty demanding. And again, in a corrupt system, if you have a spec that says this much titanium, this much magnesium, but it all gets watered down and diluted along the way, you start to put inferior things out. One really nice example to look at is the carrier, the aircraft carriers for the Chinese. Their catapult systems are just absolutely inferior. And a lot of that engineering is based on internal lies, and they lie up the chain. It's just like with the rocket forces and finding that all the fuel's been taken out of some of the rockets to use for cooking oil, for lack of a better term, when they're out there deployed. So their system is what cripples them. Their knowledge of how to do these things is certainly present, but they have a system that defeats itself internally.
Do the air wings know this? Do they hesitate to train because of the risk of accident?
They're training much more rigorously right now. More established programs like J-20 are up and moving. But what they won't do is they won't put on an exercise that can be easily watched and evaluated from us. So an air wing getting off its sorties and going out to the bomb range, very simple stuff. They can do that. Dogfighting, they'll do that training, and we won't bat an eyelash. What we're really looking for is a joint cohesive exercise that shows that they can employ different elements of warfare to a strategic effect. And you're not going to see a lot of that because they're worried about what that outcome might look like to us.
Gordon, you have one more question.
Okay, our planes and ships are better. Can they sort of, through numbers, actually defeat us because quantity has a quality all of its own, as they say?
Yes, and I was about to say that, but you beat me to it. It's very true. If I can make more, what I'm more concerned about is, as high end as our stuff is, we really now we're at a point of inflection. So go back to World War II again. All those battleships, the battleships were not appropriate for an oncoming aircraft carrier world. Luckily, our carriers, many will debate how that played out, but our carriers were not at Pearl that day. The battleships were. Well, now it's the carriers that we worry about, because we live in a space world of EMP, electromagnetic pulses. We live in an advanced weaponry world with drones, seaborne drones, robotics, AI controlling weapon systems. And so but we still keep throwing $11 billion at Ford class carriers. What we have to do is evaluate the kit we fight with today. Is it appropriate for the fight we're going to see months away, maybe a year away? And I would argue that not only does our stuff have to be much cheaper, it has to be much more deployable, and it has to be much more lethal and higher tech. If we keep investing in legacy weapon systems, like we'll just make a new bomber that goes one knot faster and drops three more bombs, that kind of incremental thinking will imperil us.
Blaine Holt, retired Air Force general, served as deputy military representative of NATO. Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.